Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we return to the topic of Etheric Warriors, which is also the name of the website by Don and Carol Croft. Don Croft and traveling partner Francisco have recently returned from an enduring trip to Florida by land and then to Central America by sea. They traveled in 12-hour shifts in a small open boat along the Caribbean coast. Not many would attempt this kind of journey. We get an idea of what it was like to be exposed to the elements, harassed by the U.S. Coast Guard, and the rare moments of seeing into the etheric. In past interviews with Don and Carol, we spoke about the quiet buildup of microwave antenna towers, radar domes, and multiple ionospheric heater sites. Our environment has been saturated with electromagnetic and microwave smog that interfere with the base frequency of biological life on this planet. To briefly review and connect the past shows on this topic, in June 2012, Dr. Konstantin Korotkov was on the show confirming that orgone energy can be measured using GDV cameras, that's gas discharge visualization cameras. We've also examined in a three-part series orgone energy as it relates to the man who discovered it, research physician and scientist Wilhelm Reich. Orgone energy has been described as a biological energy in living substances that can coalesce to create organization on all scales. Within the microscopic, it's called bions, and within the macroscopic structures, orgone energy would be clouds, and to an even larger form, galaxies. In the last decade, the science and interpretation of orgone has branched out into various groups and has taken the form as a global effort of people crafting their own pieces of orgonite made from crystals, metallic shavings, and resin. There's a formula to this, including modifying Reich's work in creating tower busters. The Etheric Warriors group has been infiltrated by government agents in the past, and since then, Don has screened the members of the forum and created an amazing online collaboration of information from individuals around the world working with orgonite and or etheric energy. Don makes it clear that this is all subjective, this is just his experience, and he's not trying to prove anything. He says a lot of people read the forum as entertainment, and that's fine too. Don Croft, welcome to Another News.
Thanks, Jeff.
You and Francisco recently completed a long trip that involved driving down to Florida from the Northwest with a boat and ultimately traveling by sea along the Caribbean coast to Belize. Can you tell listeners about the primary mission of this trip and how long it took?
Well, Francisco and I assumed that the primary purpose was to get some bank accounts set up in Costa Rica, because he had been getting a lot of pressure from the tax Gestapo, and they're obviously moving to destroy him by building up momentum in incremental ways. And we'd had a shot across our bow a year ago in the state of Idaho, so we knew that that process was starting with us. So some foreign banking provides some security for anybody who has to make a living. As it turned out, that may not have been our primary purpose. We made it to Belize, but I was just too exhausted to go any farther, so we did our banking there and made our way back.
Can you tell listeners about what Francisco does?
He has orgonita.eu in Spain. And in Spain, orgonite is growing in popularity perhaps faster than anywhere else in the world. An exception may be Greece. It's even ridiculed in the media now. So we see that as a huge positive step. And we feel that's why he was being targeted. That's the main reason.
I see.
Because he's getting well known. Here, the CIA and the NSA have infrastructure in place that will suppress any progressive movement pretty effectively. It's failing with this one, but if it weren't for that suppression, this would have made it to mainstream consciousness probably 10 years ago.
This trip was fascinating to read about for me on your forum, ethericcorridors.com. And Francisco and you put together a great video as well. And it was quite cinematic in a way. And the story is very interesting. And I think we should start to take listeners through the trip a little bit. And can we start by you're leaving Idaho with the boat?
Yeah. The reason we went to Florida was because I hadn't decided which way to go, West Coast or East Coast. West Coast route would have involved twice as much distance. I wanted to drop a lot of organite in the area off Mexico's coast where the hurricanes are generated. Hmm. I asked Carol for her advice, and she said that the eastern route seemed a lot safer. So she doused several areas that we could gift on the way to Costa Rica, mainly the coastal islands of Mexico and Honduras, and an area north of the Cuban coast between Key West and Mexico that needed a lot of organite. So we did that. And there were a lot of confirmations. That's 400 miles from Key West to Isla Mujeres, Mexico, and the point of the Yucatan Peninsula. And man, it took us 25 hours, and it was rough. We both got seasick. But we were careful to toss these little organite tower busters every mile or so along that stretch that Carol indicated, and Francisco sees energy, and he saw two dark columns of energy, very dark energy, on parallel to our route on either side. We were going right through the middle of it. And it was possibly from undersea cables that are now weaponized to use for weather warfare throughout the world. The corporate order weaponizes whatever they possibly can to use against the human race. And this is one example. So I got to see the Cuban coast at the very end of that. When the sun came up, we could see the lighthouse and the hills and stuff. So I thought that was pretty special. But after we tossed that last power buster, we were still about 5 hours from Mexico. A big pot of dolphins came at us from every direction and leaping in the by the bow of the boat and crossing underneath and jumping up on the other side. We were quite excited. I'd never seen that before. I'd only read about it. And all our gifting in that boat, the Zodiac, that Carol and I did in Florida 10 years ago, you know, that's what we did to stop the hurricanes. That's why there haven't been any hurricanes. We were never visited that way by dolphins, although we interacted with a lot of dolphins nearly every time we went out for that year.
You said you would get confirmation, and could you describe what confirmation looks like for listeners when you put orgone in certain areas?
Visual confirmation is the kind that anybody can observe, and that's when you see a sky that has a lot of white out and indistinct clouds and lack of vibrant colors. After you finish a little organite distribution run, the sky generally becomes brilliant blue, clear, and all the clouds are bright, white, distinct, and usually, nowadays, you'll also see a lot of sylphs. Sylphs are these cloud forms that are, they look like sculptures, and oftentimes they look like images. Like I saw one with it looked like a dolphin one time. You know, it lasted mm-hmm. for a long time. A lot of people see angelic sort of images. These are in the stratosphere. They're obviously not natural because they go off in a lot of directions, usually. Oh, like somebody took a paintbrush and made them. and they're almost always very bright. And the ambient light can't really account for that brightness. And you get a strong feeling in the heart when you look at these. We believe that's an interactive dynamic that's happening right there.
I often hear about that, and I thought that they were cirrus clouds from the spray planes.
I can say they're not cirrus clouds, is because cirrus clouds are always uniform. You might see a few of them, or you might see a whole lot of them, but they're uniform. It's like a cloud explosion. It's really impossible to describe, but seeing one makes all the difference. And more people are seeing these. Yeah, we even see them over Los Angeles these days when we go visit there. And before we started doing this in 2001, you couldn't even see the sun in Los Angeles on a clear day. We couldn't even stand to drive through there. We always drove around it. But after a lot of people started doing this work, we love driving through Los Angeles now. And you go out to Palm Springs, and it's like, it's so green, it's like you're in Ireland. It was never that way. It was always brown desert, dead.
Getting back to the sylphs, I didn't think they were supernatural, or I thought they were merely effects from, you know, the spraying and the cirrus clouds that whatever they would spray up there.
When I dropped organite in the mountains all around this valley where we live, after I did that about 8 years ago from the airplane, the sylphs started showing up every day. And whenever they would spray the chemtrails, the sylphs would take that chemtrail material and turn it into more sylphs. Now, more and more people are reporting this on the forum from around the world, people who are doing this work. So it's pretty consistent. And I'm kind of careful to choose credible people to post reports. I do my best to screen out the flakes and the people who exaggerate, because it's important to have an objective record, as objective as possible.
Yes. I was reading this book by Fortune Dior, called Psychic Self-Defense. It was written in the 1920s. And she references sylphs as elementals in the sky. That's what made me reconsider what I was seeing up there, as you described.
Sylphs pretty much disappeared by the 1920s because, as I understand it, the broadcast antennas were putting out so much power in those days. That's illegal now. But in those days, I mean, radio stations could be heard for 1,000 miles, you know? And the sylphs, this is what I read, just pretty much disappeared after that and were probably only seen in areas that were very remote from those transmitters. But people who watch the sky a lot know that sylphs weren't seen, or were never seen, or almost never seen before about 2004. And I think that's when there was a saturation point reached by the amount of organite that was distributed, and I think mainly the number of death towers that were flipped with organite. Because when you put organite in one of these death towers, which people mistakenly call cell towers, it turns it into a life force generator. And the corporate order are too stupid to turn these things off when that happens. And I think it's because they can't perceive life force. They don't understand life force. They understand death force.
Yes.
Their currency is death. That's what they trade on, death and destruction.
Good point.
And they're psychics. They're not very good at perceiving positive energy.
That's an area that we have talked about before, the psychics and the remote viewing that's done.
Oh, my God. They have an army of psychics. It's growing all the time.
Who are these people, and why do you think they would do this kind of work?
When Carol and I first got together, the NSA and the CIA were murdering psychics left and right, good psychics, the ones that wouldn't work for them. Most psychics will work for them because they don't have any character. Psychics are like anybody else. No character, no conscience. no desire to distinguish right from wrong, only a desire to have a personal advantage and to be comfortable. So these agencies are really good at profiling people and manipulating people in any way conceivable. So the New Age movement is the recruiting ground for psychic predators. The whole infrastructure represented by theosophy has made that possible. The British created that back when they were taking over India, and it was so handy over there that they brought it over to Europe and made a fake religion out of it. It has pretty much supplanted churchianity. And that was accomplished by the 1960s. The hippie movement was a theosophical movement. And most people that follow that paradigm don't even know what the word theosophy is. And that's how good they are at hiding their agenda. They think that they believe this way because they came to it on their own. But it's just blind imitation. Most people will never examine reality independently because there's an element of accountability in that. And it goes along with conscience and character and the will to do right. You know, most people probably won't make that choice. So they're just going to be swept along and used in whatever way the corporate order finds convenient.
Yes.
But discernment's becoming fashionable now, and I think it's on account of the Internet. And I see that more among the very young than anyone else. So that's a very hopeful sign for me. Censorship is talked about now. It never used to be. Remember when Will Smith's kid put up a video about making Organite on Facebook?
Yes.
Oh, my God, it spread all over the world. Jaden Smith's his name. He's a nice kid, teenager.
Mm-hmm.
He made beautiful Organite. Looks like Carol's. And that disappeared, like before a day, that was gone. And everybody started talking about NSA censorship of Facebook. It was wonderful. They're worried about that. They're more afraid of us than they are about being shot, okay? They're more afraid of exposure than being tortured to death. They're more afraid of exposure than waterboarding, okay, than their own torture methods. The exposure of the NSA and the corporate world order as the enemies of humanity. People saying that out loud in public, in any public forum, Facebook, Twitter, every time somebody says that, it's like a bullet to the head to the parasite, okay? It's really better than killing them. And I don't think anything can be solved by killing these bastards. Only by exposing them. I don't care if nobody ever arrests them, because exposure is worse than death to them. They're not afraid of death. You know, they want to reign in hell. But they are afraid of exposure because they're parasites.
Good point. Very good point. Yeah. Don, do you think that the CIA and the NSA, most of them are Satanists?
I know that when I was a kid, a lot of them were actual patriots. But Freemasonry is the common factor in every government organization, bureaucracy at the upper levels is Freemasonry. And in the FBI, their Freemasonry involves KKK, especially on the Indian reservations. But above a certain degree in Freemasonry, it's openly satanic. That's 33rd degree and above. You don't see that except in the temples. You don't see it in the lodges. Like my grandfather's 32nd degree. I think he knew about what was going on, but he didn't participate in it. He was in Harry Truman's lodge. Harry Truman knew. He was 33rd degree.
Mm-hmm.
But they look for people that have no character, no conscience. They look for people that are easy to manipulate. And that's who they employ now. I don't think any of these agencies have people of character in them anymore. I think they're all retired or killed off. It's that bad. It's like Nazism. It's like the SS. And the SS moved right into the CIA when it was first formed. Also into the KGB.
Yes.
The SS didn't lose the war. They won the war. The German people lost the war.
Yes, we hear a lot about that. Now, Don, I want to get back to your travel experience to the Caribbean coast. Being in that boat must have been something interesting. Could you describe the Zodiac to listeners?
Oh, sure. Sure. It's a 21-foot motorboat, 150 horsepower. It's an open boat, and I had to make a little sleeping platform for the passenger bench. But, oh, man, I'll tell you, it was so rough. You know, 12 hours of being pounded every day along the coast, it was never calm except the day we left Mexico to come back to Key West. It was the only calm day on the water. It's very pretty. I don't think it's ever going to sink, so we never felt unsafe. The only risk was traveling along the coral reef, but we just stayed a mile off from it in case we lost our motor, so I could get the spare motor, a 5-horse motor, down in the water and get it started. Because ending on one of those reefs is going to deflate the float tube around the boat. Now, the boat's still going to go because it has a rigid bottom that's seaworthy, but I didn't want to get stuck in Mexico with a damaged boat, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So we were very careful. But a couple of times we were vertical fore and aft and vertical side to side as somebody's breaking seas and high wind. It was a pretty rough trip. The worst part was around the Blue Hole off Belize coast. That's another subject.
Could you tell listeners how you navigated at night, what food you brought with you? Because this journey, I don't think a lot of people would take a trip like this, and it's quite courageous, but could you tell listeners a little bit more about how you navigated through that, through the waters on that small boat, and what did you eat?
Oh, thanks, Jeff. Yeah, I whenever I travel, I get pretty healthy because I make up a lot of raw food concoctions in my dryer, and I live on that. It's, I always feel great, but I'm an old guy, you know, so. Yeah, it's crazy to take a trip like that, but I can't get a passport, and I wanted somebody along that has a little boat experience, so both of us needed some help against the corporate order financially, so I invited Francisco to come along. And I have two GPSs. One of them is a big screen that has side-viewing sonar for seeing what's underwater, as well as the depth of the water and stuff, and a very good chart. And charts for the whole region.
Mm-hmm.
And a handheld GPS in case they screwed with the first one. They often screw with my GPS when I'm flying. They'll block the satellite signals. So that's why I took two for the boat. As I said, I had charts for the entire region, so we knew where the ports were. We knew how far we had to go before we could get gas. I would sleep on the boat, either anchored or anchored by a beach or tied up at a pier, and Francisco would sleep either in a tent on shore or he'd get a little hotel in these little port towns. And that's how we worked it. I always stayed with the boat.
Did you encounter any sabotage on this journey?
The only sabotage was the GPS position indicated about a quarter mile from where we actually were. So the risk in that was that we had to navigate through the reefs in channels that were almost never straight lines. But we had to use a combination of looking at a GPS image and looking at breaking surf on the reef, because it was always quite rough, so there was plenty of surf. And just be mindful not to get close to any of that breaking surf, and we were okay. And this is another reason we wanted to always get to port before the sun went down, because to do that in the dark is, it's more risk than I wanted to take.
Can you tell listeners about you and Francisco, what you were seeing in terms of etheric energy?
The islands that Carol doused on the map. That's where Francisco saw a lot of dark energy, and these were uninhabited, except some had military installations, probably underground. And it only took a little bit of organite to clear that up. But we did that, and I think it was important to do. And his most, his strongest sensations were in Belize and at the Blue Hole. That's mainly where we use his abilities for dropping organite. We get to probably more than half the death towers in Belize for the week that we were there.
That's pretty amazing, Don. Regarding the Blue Hole, some listeners may not know what that is and where it is and why it's significant. And if you could explain that experience and why you gifted that area.
Okay, thanks. Anybody can look online, look for Blue Hole Belize. It's the largest blue hole in the world, as far as I know. There are several on Andros Island in the Bahamas. And Carol and I did those about, 14 years ago. And these are all vortexes, and they're perfectly round and they're perfectly straight down. At the one in Belize, Jacques Cousteau spent quite a lot of time. Because they're vortexes, we always assume that they're important. And the corporate world order, the occult part of it, will always steal the energy from these vortexes by polluting them with murder rituals, massacres, any kind of mass murder event that they'll use to steal the energy of these vortexes around the world. And there are very few exceptions. There are very few places that they haven't managed to pirate. We call it pirating. One of them was Four Corners. Those several Indian tribes around there, Navajo, Hopi, Ute, they just wouldn't allow it. They somehow managed to prevent it. Another one is Shoga Dambil in Persia. There's a ziggurat there. It's still there. And that, the psychics are psychics. Carol, Dooney, Francie, Francisco, and a few others. They call it the mother vortex. It's like the most important one in the world. Well, as it turns out, this blue hole in Belize, according to them, it is the counterpart of the one in Persia. It's equally important. So they encourage us to go there and do that. And we only had like four pieces of organite left at 60 miles from Belize coast. And it was extremely rough getting out there. They really churned up the seas and the wind. It was a horrible trip. We made it out there. We camped on one of the atoll islands. And the next morning, we managed to make our way to the Blue Holes, 12 miles across, a whole lot of treacherous water along on top of that reef. It's called Lighthouse Reef. It's 20 miles long. Blue Hole's about halfway, about in the middle. And I don't think we could have done it without a guide. Unfortunately, a Belize native, a fisherman, needed a ride down there to meet somebody else. So he took us through the reef. That was quite an experience. And when we dropped the organite in there, these incredible sylphs showed up. I'd never seen anything like that. We saw it from a distance because we left right after that. And by the time we got to the edge of the atoll, you know, ready for the open sea, it was about 8 miles away, so we got a good view. And it was like a massive display of sylph directly over that blue hole, and it was over a thunderhead that had built up.
Oh, yeah, wow.
And we both sensed that there was a lot of anger and fury directed at us. Now, I'll say something that I don't want anybody to disbelieve, but what we found over the years, what we've come to, and this keeps happening again and again, it happened today, is that there's a race of aliens called Draconians that represent the worst of the corporate world order. And we feel that they're more or less worshipped by these occult organizations like the Masons, the Triads, I guess some of these creepy African witch doctor societies, you know, to kill people and eat people, etc., all around the world. And they worship these reptilian sort of creatures. And they've been here a long time. And my theory is that Baphomet, who is the Masonic god, and all you got to do is read Morals and Dogma by Albert Pike, and there it is. And that's a spitting image of a draconian. And I've seen one. Carol's seen more. And a few people I know of have seen them. And like I say, this sounds so silly and bizarre to most people. And I don't claim any authority. I'm just saying this is our experience. But that anger was real, and that fury, and it was the roughest sea voyage we ever had for the next couple of days after that on the way home.
Our guest is Don Croft, and we're talking about his travels across the country and then the voyage along the Caribbean coast. We'll be right back after this break. Again, just now, our guest is Don Croft, and we're talking about his recent excursions across land and sea to distribute, organize, and keep the business going. You said that you've seen one. Can you tell us about that experience? Because I don't think a lot of people will get the chance to see anything close to a Draco reptilian winged entity.
Yeah, sure. Well, I've seen several non-humans and up close, and I'm talking 3D, but not lately. You see more in Los Angeles than any place on the planet, apparently. I don't know exactly why. But with the draconian, Carol and I, when we first started doing this in 2001, we were beset with this stuff, and we had overt intimidation and stuff from agency. The first time we set up our Organite Cloudbuster, we had people waiting to arrest us, you know.
Really?
On the road and stuff. It was very bizarre. It was a whole new experience for me and for Carol. That's when, back in those days, we were pretty frantic because it looked like the corporate world order was going to get their wishes one way or the other with the help of these off-worlders. And I think that help was crucial. So in those days, the tide hadn't turned yet. It did turn around 2004. Turned against them. Irreversibly, we believe. In the middle of all that, I woke up and I saw this face over me. And it was it looked like Baphomet. And Carol saw it, and she agreed. The Masons called Baphomet the hermaphroditic she-goat. Can you believe that? I told you, it's infantile. But no, it's a draconian. And if you took a picture of, what's that politician from Missouri? He's a really horrible person. I can't remember his name. You ever put Silly Putty newspaper photo and then stretched it?
Right.
And it stretched the face. Well, if you took his face and stretched it vertically, that's what Baphomet looks like.
That's great.
I wrote that in my report.
Oh, you did?
The Adventures of Don and Carol Croft. That's 5 years of journal reports.
And that could be found on your website, ethericcarriers.com.
And also in whale.2. Whale 2 has a whole lot of information that's compiled from many sources. Most of it's solid and reliable. Nearly all of it is unbelievable to pajama people or anyone who doesn't want to be accountable for discernment. But, you know, all the good stuff is that way. Nothing worth knowing is credible to the pajama people, I believe.
Yes, I know the site you're talking about. That's a great site. Who does that site?
Sure, that's John Scudamore in England. He's a good guy. He's actually an aristocrat, and he has a castle, and nobody was able to get rid of the ghost of one of his satanic ancestors. A very unpleasant, aggressive ghost. And Carol said, well, I can probably do it for you. So Carol made up a device that had stibnite. I don't remember what else. It had some morganite in it. And she put two or three of those around his castle, and the ghost was gone after that. That was 5 years ago. Hasn't returned. Now, he hired some of the best psychics in England to get rid of that ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And he laughed at them all. So that was pretty good for Carol, I thought. But she enjoyed being there. She met Greg Hallett there. And Greg Hallett's an author who wrote Hitler Was a British Agent.
Oh, yes.
Also,
okay.
Stalin's British Training. Really good stuff that you won't find anywhere else.
I want to go into some of the psychic attack areas that you help people with protection, and so does Dooney, one of your colleagues. Can you tell listeners what's going on with that service that you and Carol and Dooney do for people to protect either etheric warrior members or others that are trying to get their organized business going, or they're being sabotaged through that, or being attacked psychically?
Well, thanks for bringing that up, Jeff, because Dooney, Laura Wisey is her name, she's probably the only person on the whole planet who teaches people how to hit back effectively when people in these agencies try to ruin their lives. And as I say, they use an army of psychics, and they also use electronic warfare and scalar microwave. I don't really know what all they use because it's military secret. But thousands and thousands of people are being targeted by these agencies right now. And these are people who either are doing good in the world or are poised to do good in the world. Now, anybody who does good in the world is the enemy of the corporate world order, which is this global parasite. And so they're systematically sought out and targeted. And people who are very isolated are often destroyed this way. They're driven insane. They're killed with cancer. They're poisoned. Any number of things. Now, zappers will prevent the poisons and the fast cancer and stuff like that from affecting somebody. People who don't use zappers are kind of vulnerable. You can overcome it in other ways, but not as likely. And zappers are real easy. That's the easy, cheap way to do things. A lot of people make zappers now. But Dooney is the only person teaching how to hit back in the etheric realm, which is where the psychic attacks come from. It all happens in the etheric realm. It's the unseen matrix of energy that surrounds everything and permeates everything. Tesla's technology is based on ether, most of it. Reich's technology is based on ether. They call it orgone. And otherwise, the Church of Settled Science still denies the existence of ether. That's like denying the existence of gravity and trying to build a science around denial of gravity. And that's why science kind of falls flat these days. It's still 100 years behind human awareness, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
We're still driving internal combustion motor cars.
Isn't that something?
When there's free energy available and there's anti-gravity available. It's crazy. So that's why Dooney's getting hit so hard. And we're getting hit hard because we started this thing. And there aren't very many people who are getting hit as hard as they're hitting us. Francisco's one. and really just a few others. Carol Tuigo is one. She's in North Dakota. We helped her out today, and she helps us. She's really good with the etheric stuff. Most of the traditionalists are. The African witch doctor I worked with in Uganda was extremely skilled and psychic.
Don, if people want to get in touch with Dooney, how do they do that?
Oh, thanks. Her website is donebydooney.com. She charges a nominal fee to coach people online. She watches your energy while you do the simple exercises. And this is something anybody can do. Basically, the human heart is the most powerful weapon there is against these parasites, the human heart. They can't conquer the heart. The heart, they are vulnerable to our hearts. And we're essentially sending love. We don't hate them. Like I say, we don't want to kill them. If they die during these exercises, we consider it suicide. But that's not our call, you know. Mm-hmm. We just send them love. But they're all vulnerable to this. That's the big secret. It's so easy. See, now Dooney's the only one doing this. I expected more would be doing it by now, but maybe in 10 years, 1,000 people will be doing it. But maybe it only takes a dozen people to bring the corporate order down. You know what I'm saying? That they're extremely vulnerable on a lot of fronts. Exposure, fighting back hysterically, distributing organite around their institutions, taking back the vortexes.
Don, can you describe the process of boosting?
Sure, and this is something we discovered about 12 years ago. Carol and I first, we made a sucker punch. It's a crystal with a Mobius coil around it with a pulse being sent through it by a zapper circuit, which is 15 cycles a second, square wave, because that's what I have. I'm not an electronics person. And that's what we use to keep these off-worlders, keep them from messing up our lives back in the early days. So a lot of people, when this movement started spreading in 2001, a lot of people started making these and using them and carrying them around. We found out they block surveillance, which is awfully handy because everybody's got bugs in their bodies, in their cars, their clothes. Transponders, video cameras in the ceiling, everybody's got them who's doing any good in the world. And the NSA and the CIA watch everybody, track everybody, listen to conversations. And the sucker punch was blocking all that, so it gave us some privacy. It was great. Well, after a while, we needed more, so we developed a thing called a power wand. And those are still being made and sold. And then we discovered that the human heart does a better job than any of this stuff. And hitting back effectively, stronger, purer. It doesn't make you tired to do it. You feel invigorated by it because you're bringing in this healing energy into your own body and sending it out. And it's an endless source of it. You can use the energy of these vortexes because they're ours now. They're the human races again. They don't belong to the parasite anymore. We took it back. So, but just visit the site and see how easy it is. It's simple. It's really simple. I do it in a heartbeat. It's just an automatic response, like breathing.
It's really great to hear that. I noticed in your writing about your trip, I read you're putting a Joe cell into an aircraft, and we, I've had Patrick Kelly on the show to talk about some of the free energy devices that he's cataloged in his ebook, and I was really intrigued by the Joe cell. Could you explain to listeners what a Joe cell is, and if you're going to build it, how are you going to do it?
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I you can look up Joe cell online. NewTech2000.com in Australia sells the Joe cells. And I bought one from them. The first one I made in 2000, I had an engineer make it in 2001. I put it in my truck, and after about a year and a half of fiddling with this thing and having Kara look at the energy, it started working. It started causing implosion in the cells of the motor, and that caused the energy the motor shakes so bad that the cell broke apart and the water leaked out. And I, this is just a brief account. But this is what showed me that it actually works.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had known Wilhelm Müller, who built the first magnet-powered engine. And I had played around with his motors and visited him many times in Canada before he was murdered. So I knew free energy was viable and accessible now. But if they would stop killing the inventors, because there's scores of these inventors, if they would stop doing that, it would be on the market now. But JoCell is one that anybody can make, but because it's so interactive, I don't think it'll ever get widespread and popular. But I bought this little one for an airplane that I'm building, and I started the airplane about 7 years ago. And this summer I want to finish it. And if it works, yeah, I intend to go public with it, and, you know, high profile. And do a trip like that one I did last January and publicize it. Yeah, I'm a good enough pilot now, so why not, right?
It didn't occur to me that you could use a JoCell for an aircraft, and it totally makes sense.
Yeah, that's my dream.
Well, speaking of JoCells and aircraft, you saw some UFOs on your trip, and you saw some close to the water. But could you share some of those experiences with listeners?
Now, I saw, you know, I always see UFOs at night if I'm sleeping outside, because on a clear night, they just look like stars that are moving.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the middle of the night, that can't be the sun's reflection or the moon's reflection. There has to be a light source. So, yeah, they're UFOs. They're not satellites. And if you're lucky, it'll change direction, so you'll be even more convinced. Now, I've seen a lot of UFOs closer than that and a couple of times up very close. You know, but that was years ago. But on this trip, on our way back to Florida from Mexico, and like I say, it was a calm. The seas are very calm, uncharacteristically calm. And we decided to take a chance and go back across. The first one was pretty unpleasant. We were going to go around the coast of Mexico and go to Texas. So we did this on a whim. And after the sun went down, we were just north of the Cuban coast. There was no moon that night. It was pitch black. And the only light was from the stars, which is kind of cool, because you can actually see stuff in starlight. But this navigation light showed up. It looked, it's hard to say how far, maybe 2 or 3 miles behind me. And I thought, well, I better turn my lights on so there won't be a collision, you know, because it wasn't moving. And when you see a light on the ocean and it's not moving, chances are it's coming towards you. Or going away from you.
Mm-hmm.
So I turned my lights on, and I noticed after a while it was gone, so I turned the lights off. Happened again, another light showed off, I think it was to the right, so I did it again. And when it was time to go to bed, I was able to sleep on the boat that time because it was calm. And Francisco took over. And this is something he didn't tell me until a couple of days later, but he also saw the lights, but they were much closer to him. And then he saw these little craft underwater tracking the boat, maybe 50 yards off, first on one side, then the other, and they were luminescent. So they were apparently deep enough underwater he couldn't really distinguish the features. So it was impossible to say how far they were exactly. I think he assumed they were luminescent creatures. But the boat moves too fast and for a creature to track it that way so steadily. You know, living creatures don't move that way. So when I woke up, that's when the really weird stuff started happening. And we're both sure, and Carol's sure too, that this had to do with that blue hole that we gifted like 4 days before. And the moon hadn't come up yet, but I could see on the horizon. And I dimmed the GPS way down so I could steer towards stars. And this storm started growing on the horizon, a very tiny thunderhead, a cloud form that started growing, and it was obscuring the stars, and it growing left and right, you know, so it'll be north and south, and expanding into a dome shape. And I tried to go around it, but it was expanding so fast that I was heading straight south towards Cuba, so I decided to go through the middle of it, which would have put me right back on course toward Florida. And I swear, I felt like I was being swallowed, this opening. There was an opening.
Wow.
Like an archway. And I drove through that thing under this dark dome-shaped cloud. And by then, the moon had risen. So there was enough light to see the features. And there was a dark ring on the inside of this thing. It was like a big O-ring or a donut or something. And I went under this ring, and then everything was featureless, you know, and the sea was flat, you know, no wind or anything. And I just had this feeling like I was going into one of those carnival horror, house of horrors or something, you know. Maybe it was creepy, it was genuinely creepy.
Right.
And I kept going. It took me like 2 hours to get through this thing. The motor was acting up, it was misfiring, and you know, that added to the tension.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got through it, by then the moon had risen enough, and there was a lot more light. And I looked back on this thing, and there was, inside that dome, there were little banks of fog that were maybe 50 feet up. The bottom was 50 feet up. They were like little miniature cumulus clouds. It was very weird. And then that's when the rough stuff started. About 2 hours later, I could see on the horizon a weather front. And the reason we left Mexico, because there was a stationary cold front that was stalled on the mainland U.S., way, way up north. And I knew we had time to get to Florida, and that thing wasn't moving. But it did move. It moved rapidly towards us. And we had to fight through that thing for like 12 hours to reach the Dry Tortugas, which is the closest landfall.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 80 miles from Key West. Man, that was the roughest voyage ever. We couldn't go straight toward the destination. We had to go diagonally just to get over those big breaking waves at a snail's pace, you know. We had just about out of gas when we got there, too. Weird night.
You were harassed by the Coast Guard as well. Can you tell us what happened?
Oh, yeah. This is going to be covered in part two of the video. We're not quite done with that. It'll come out soon. I'll preface it by saying that when Carol and I and Jeff McKinley in 2006, August 2006, we took the same boat from Palm Beach, Florida, over to the Bahamas, to this huge flat area called Little Bahama Bank. It's about 100 miles across. Because there was apparently an underground weather warfare facility there that we wanted to neutralize. So we had like 300 tower busters, and we evaded surveillance. We left about 6 in the morning, and it was a really peaceful crossing, like 90 miles over to the Bahamas. Very pleasant. We dropped the organite all around this thing. We spent the whole day doing it. Very shallow water. There were no towers over there. No death towers, no harp, nothing like that. But that constant spiral storm that was being generated over that area for that previous year stopped on that day, and it never came back. You could see it in the Weather Channel every day. Spiral storm.
Mm-hmm.
We got rid of a similar one in the Gulf of Mexico a few months before that, same way. So the Coast Guard was waiting for us when we left the Bahamas. They were waiting for us. They arrested us.
Mm-hmm.
They hauled us into their facility in Palm Beach and kept us there through half the night. And every agency they called to arrest us and haul us off, they all refused to do it. So they finally let us go. and they arrested us for no reason. The same thing happened when Francisco and I left Dry Tortugas. Coast Guard was waiting for us. They kept us in handcuffs this time in our boat. Handcuffs, 6 hours. And they tried and tried and tried to find a reason to lock us up. And they finally let us go. We told them, well, now you've kept us out here. We've drifted so far off course that we don't have enough gas to make it to Key West. So they gave us 5 gallons of gas.
Great. Jeez. Oh, that's ridiculous.
Anyway, we're going to talk about that in the video. I told them, I want to give the Coast Guard a black eye for being such idiots, for such tools for the NSA, you know. And they need to grow a conscience, these guys. Arresting people for nothing in international waters, there's no excuse for that. No excuse.
Thank you so much, Don, for these fantastic stories. It's so interesting to speak with you, and, you know, we can go another hour, really. But this was a fantastic interview once again, and I definitely want to have you back on the show, and thank you for being on Another News.
Yeah, my pleasure, Jeff, and I miss talking to your audience, because they're the best in the world, those New York people. Thanks again.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Join me again on Dark Matter Radio.